I want to welcome everybody to the February 5th San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board meeting. Thank you for being here. And before we begin the agenda, I wanted to ask, first I wanted to advise everyone here that in closed session, we had two issues before the board tonight before we began. One had to do with a legal issue relative to the Los Osos water rights. The second had to do with labor negotiations with our employee groups, and the board took information and discussed that, and no final decisions were made. And now I'd like to ask the board if we can have any consensus or change regarding the order of business for tonight.
We're back to the old microphones, which means that there must be some other very important meeting going on somewhere tonight. I would propose, rather than keeping people here longer than they may want to be, I suspect the number of people are here on the PE exemption issue, and I would propose a change in the order of business, returning thereafter to status of the state budget, autism update, and then personnel request, item 7, and then with the agenda as it's printed thereafter.
Do any further comments by the board regarding Ms. Rogers' request to change?
I would support that request for change.
Any then the agenda will be altered to reflect what Marilyn had said. Do you need that repeated? You've got it. And that assumes that we're going to go now to the approval of minutes. And I think that someone wants to make a motion and then read in a correction, which is being recommended. And I don't know if Ms. Dickinson has made the recommendation for the correction. Do you want to go ahead and take that?
Do you want me to make the motion first? Okay, I move that we approve, with my correction, the minutes. Well, first of all, we should approve the minutes of January 9th. Are we doing that together, separately? January 9th and January 15th, with one correction.
We might want to do those separately since we had Mr. Buckman and Mr. Millar were absent at the January 9th meeting.
So there's that request, which makes sense. Do you want to approach it that way, Ms. Dickinson?
Let's do that. Let's approve the minutes of January 9th, 2008.
Do I have a second for approval based on Adrian's motion for the first minutes?
Second.
We have a second from Ms. Rogers. Any discussion about the minutes of that first meeting? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
And we have an abstention by Mr. Millar and second by Marilyn, so it passes 6-0 with one abstention. He abstained. Well, then there'll be a second abstention because you weren't there. So it passes 5-0 with two abstentions, Mr. Buckman, Mr. Millar. And then, Adrian, do you want to carry the banner on the second set of minutes?
Sure. I'd like to make a motion to approve the minutes of the January 15th, 2008.
No, you're not an English teacher, Lucia Marr. The construction is perfect, which you are. I take it back.
Yes, I am.
So that makes sense. Do we have a second for the approval of those minutes with the amendment as recommended by Ms. Dickinson?
I'll second that.
We have a second by Mark, Mr. Buckman. Any discussion on the approval of those minutes with the amendment that's recommended by Adrian? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? We have passing 6-0 with Ms. Dickinson making the motion, Mr. Buckman seconding it, and Mr. Millar abstaining. Next, we have a presentation that we're very, very happy to entertain from the principal, Ms. Lopez, at Pacific Beach High School.
And I'll be assisted by Chelsea from Pacific Beach High School.
And it is our pleasure to share with you our accreditation report. We placed a binder at each of the places there for you to look through as we go through this. I'm here on behalf of the Pacific Beach High School staff. Focus on Learning. Thanks, Rita. Focus on Learning is a joint process between the Western Association of Schools and Colleges and the California Department of Education. It's an ongoing school improvement process. Some of you may be familiar with it because it is the process that both San Luis High and Morro Bay High have done in the last 3 years or so. It's an in-depth look at what currently exists and what needs to be improved in relation to student learning and the school's program. It focuses on student success in meeting the expected school-wide learning results, which are called ESLRs. You may hear that term more often, and also on academic standards. In a nutshell, it asks, how are students learning, and is the school site doing everything possible to support the high achievement for each of their students? So we've gone through the process. We've put the report together. You have the report in front of you, and at the end of this month, we will have our committee chair of the visiting committee coming with two members of the visiting committee. The chair is Dr. Michael Mueller, who is the program manager at Fresno County, the Fresno County Office of Education. And then he will be joined by Mr. Jimmy Rodriguez, who is a teacher in Lemoore, California, and Mrs. Roberta Tackett, who is a principal in Oakhurst, California, in the Yosemite Unified School District. It's broken down into five chapters, and the first chapter is the school community profile. The school community profile is a large chapter filled with lots and lots of data about the community, about the history of the WASC history of the school, of which ours has received two previous six-year accreditation terms, and so we're going for our third, which is the maximum that you can receive. You can receive between 0 years to 6 years, and so we are in our third time to go for a WASC accreditation. It also includes the school purpose, the school status, lots of data about the students' demographics, about student performance data, process and perception data, surveys that we've done, and those kinds of things. So lots of data in there for at least over the last 3 years, and in some cases longer than that. Then chapter two, as you the school gets together and the members of the group that analyzes all this data and comes up with a short chapter in chapter two that looks at the kind of summary of what they find in that data. So chapter two is an introduction. It starts on page 35 of the data and implications that were found, critical academic needs that we cited and came up with, and also questions that have come up as you go through and analyze the data. So that's what you will then find in chapter two. Chapter three is a progress report of the what's happened, if there's been any major changes since the last accreditation, and how you've addressed the action plans that you put together and the visiting committee's report and things that they pointed out that they'd like to see you do. So it addresses all of those pieces in chapter three. Chapter four is kind of the meat of the report, really. It's broken down into five sections. It's the self-study findings. And so lots and lots of time is spent on putting together chapter four and taking that data that you've analyzed and looking at that in terms of the four areas of each of these sections. The first section is on organization and a vision and purpose, leadership, governance, those kinds of things. The second section looks at student learning and curriculum. The third section looks at the student learning in terms of instruction. The fourth section, student learning, is for Section A and the areas of strength for Section A. And then after that, in each section, you will see that as well for B, C, and so forth. What you do is you take all of those sections of improvement that you've identified, areas of, for growth, and then you look at what are two or three of the key things that you want to focus on to write your school-wide action plan. In Chapter 5, you'll find the school-wide action plan, and we identified three major goals that we would be addressing, and we wrote our action plan for you. Keeping up with me? I'm flying through there. Okay. So the first goal on the school-wide action plan that we identified deals with maintaining, expanding, establishing new programs for students that are having difficulty with the high school exit exam. So looking at that, and you'll see an action plan that identifies the steps that we will go through and be looking at to address that. Goal 2 addresses our students with special needs and our EL students. So there's an action plan in there as to what we're going to do to look at those programs and the needs of those students. And then the last one addresses support and needs for students outside of their academic areas and in terms of making healthy choices, in terms of support that they need in order to be ready to be able to address academic endeavors in that and those areas. So those are the three goals that we identified after going through the self-study to address and write up in our action plans. And then the last section is the appendix, and there's a multitude of stuff in the appendix. It's listed what everything that's in there. There's a title page that shares that with you, and also at the end of the table of contents, there's a list of what's in the appendix, everything from the district strategic plan to our daily schedule to the ESLRs, the school's purpose, and those kinds of things. So to some background and resource information for the committee that they might need to see. Again, this report has been sent to the members of the committee. It's been divided up among them for them to read and be ready to come ask us questions and verify what's in the report. They will be with us on February 24th, will be the first day. That's a Sunday. We are finalizing the schedule, but it looks like they will be here at about 3 o'clock for a reception at the school. So we would be inviting you to come visit with them and meet with them at that time, and we'll get more information out of the specifics, but it looks like it'll be about 3 o'clock on February 24th. And then they will be at the school Monday and Tuesday following that, and then on Wednesday, late morning or afternoon, they will be presenting their findings as to what they saw and what they verified and validated with the report. They will then write up their report, send it on up to the state, and then sometime in the spring we'll find out the accreditation term that we would receive. So that's it in a nutshell. And if you have questions, yes.
Karen, what date were you inviting the board to interact with the team?
February 24th at this point, about 3 o'clock or so in the afternoon. It's a Sunday afternoon.
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah.
Okay,
they arrive on a Sunday afternoon. They like to kind of meet for a short time, everybody. And then they do meet usually with the – looks like they will meet that afternoon with the parent community committee. And then that'll be it for Sunday, and then they'll meet with everybody else during the week. At my house, my house at Pacific Beach High School. It's easier to find than my house. So.
Any other questions?
Yeah, just
board members,
quick.
Mark?
Karen?
Yes.
Completing this or doing your master's, which was more difficult?
Well, I don't know. It'd be a toss-up. Master's, maybe, because it was the first thing that I did, and this is follow that, so it gave me good preparation. But we have a great team at the school, and it's their work. It's a team effort. So,
Karen,
yes.
I was involved years ago with San Luis High School during the accreditation process with all the committees, all the meetings, all the work that's done by staff, students, and parents. Can you just give us a little bit of what that process is like, the time that everybody puts in?
Yes, it takes a great deal of time. At a bigger site like San Luis High, you have lots more people to get involved in it, so you can split into, like, for example, those five sections. Just that alone, you would have a committee for each of those five sections that would then report back to their other home committee, which would be their department committee, and you would bounce things back and forth and work with that, just that chapter alone. when you work with a small site and the small schools model is to your committee as a whole. So everybody gets involved in every part of the report. So it's not as much divide and conquer. So in that respect, it's a little bit different. But everybody's involved, and the whole team at Pacific Beach was involved in every piece of that report that's in front of you. And so we were a committee that did Section A, a committee that did Section B, the same committee that did Section C, the same committee that did the data collection, the same committee that analyzed that. So, but lots of input. The school site council looked at it as it went along. Parents were involved. Surveys went out to parents and students, and in addition to the surveys we do every year with our graduate parents and students and graduates to gather then that data and analyze that data as well. So it doesn't start like in this last September. It starts like a year and a half at least ago in order to end up with the report. And then it's ongoing. It's an ongoing process. Okay. So,
Catherine?
I'm new to the board, and I had never been to Pacific Beach High School, so Karen was nice enough to show me around yesterday, and then today I was able to visit the classrooms in progress. And I just want to comment, there is no question in my mind that you will receive the accolade of being a model continuation school yet again. I was blown away. It was incredible. This, in the English classroom, there was a teacher, Mr. Kearns, Mr. Kirk, who was teaching Othello line by line, verse by verse, and the kids were getting it, and they were engaged. And then in the social studies classroom, Mrs. Newman was working with caucuses, and they were emulating what was going on today across the country. And in the art science classroom, they were making mobiles out of fossils. And it was just a really engaging and perfect example of a continuation school. And I commend you and your staff and for all your work. Thank you.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Adrian, then Walt.
I think this... I don't know if this is on.
You're on. You're good.
This is the most appealing report I've seen, including AGHS. Mm-hmm. You did a really good job. It's interesting to look at it. And just to pick up one sentence here from Claude Alvis, he was my principal when I taught at Del Mar Elementary School way back in the early 70s. But he wrote, as I interact with the Pacific Beach High School students through the individual scholarship interview process, he's with the Martin Luther King Scholarship Committee. He's a community member statement. I am continually impressed by their empathetic, caring, and positive attitudes. And I think that is such a great thing to achieve with the student body. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Walt.
I just wanted to acknowledge the hard work that the team did on this accreditation. I know that you've been through this before. I also want to I know Chelsea's going to talk about it, but I get to spend during part of the year quite a bit of time on the campus and get to know a lot of students during mock trial preparation. And mock trial competition starts tomorrow night at 6, I think it is, at the courthouse in San Luis Obispo. And then is it prosecution tomorrow night, Chelsea?
Defense
tomorrow, thank you. And prosecution on Wednesday or on Thursday. You have to get there early, and it's a wonderful opportunity to see the really wonderful, unique thing about Pacific Beach, which is the students. And I'm circulating to the board members here an email that we got from Reggetti High School after one of our scrimmages, and they just love the unique, kind, open attitude of our students. Every year that I've participated, I've made friends with students. I run into them in the community after they've graduated, and it's a great experience. The best thing going for PB is the staff and the kids. And congratulations, Karen.
I think
you'll get the model continuation again too.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks, Walt. No other questions or comments. Karen, I just wanted to say, as Catherine did when she saw the teachers and the students at your school, that no matter what happens, and we all feel that only good things will come from the process, that the value to the district is the quality of the students that are there at Pacific Beach High School and their commitment, and the teachers, the ones who work with the students so well and create these great citizens that come from diverse backgrounds. But thank you for this presentation. Thank you very much.
And thank Chelsea and actually another one of our students, Sean, who's back there behind the microphone. So.
Sure. We get enough accolades. Thank you, Karen. Next, we have correspondence, and I think at the time of the board meeting, there was one piece of correspondence from Superintendent Dr. Julian Crocker. And I also think, and the other board members can confirm this, that there were also quite a few emails regarding the physical education exemption issue tonight that everyone received through the school's distribution center. And that'll be discussed later, of course. And there was something that was handed out earlier tonight, but I think that in all fairness, it should come earlier and be part of a package instead of just being placed on a desk, and that can be brought up later from one individual. I did want to say about the correspondence from Dr. Crocker at the County Office of Education. There's a part that I wanted to read for the public tonight on the back page. He writes, among several things at the very end, I commend the board for presenting a budget with the stated commitment of maintaining reserves of 5% when the state requires only 3%. This confirms the district's effort to maintain a fiscally prudent, unrestricted general fund, and that the ending balance provides the district with flexibility and able to react to changes or unforeseen events in the future, which we will be facing because of the budget issues that are now before us that Mr. Miller will discuss in fuller later. He goes on, Dr. Crocker says, and he says, I concur with the positive certification that the first interim report is submitted, and I caution the district to be aware of significant deficit predicted for the 2008-2009 state budget. But he goes on and finalizes it by saying, I share your commitment to quality education for all students in the San Luis Coastal Unified School District, a very positive letter from Dr. Crocker. Any other comments about the correspondence? Now, public comment is on the agenda next, and I would just ask, if you have public comment, this is a time to make it. Although we have an issue on the agenda later that most people here may be here to speak toward, so if you want to wait till we get to a particular issue, which we've moved up regarding the physical education exemption, that may be the best time to do it. But if there's someone here who wishes to speak to the board on some other topic, this would be the time to do that. And if you could state your name.
Yes.
That would be terrific. Thank you.
Yeah. Good evening, board members. My name is Edrina Ramirez. I am the president of DILAC, District English Learners Advisory Committee. On behalf of the DILAC parents, thank you for providing transportation during the 2007 summer school session. There was an increase in enrollment as well as attendance in the of the children in 2007. We are requesting that you will continue providing transportation for the program and the necessary funding for the 2007-08 summer school session for our English learners. In addition, we want to be sure that transportation for the children who live in Los Osos is provided. And thank you again for your support for the English learners program and for considering our current request for transportation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Ramirez, for that comment. Are there any other people here tonight in the public that would wish to address the board now? Mr. Bedrigian? And again, you know the routine. If you can state your name. Thanks.
Bruce Bedrigian, president of the Teachers Association, although probably more here tonight as a parent with three children in the school district and a teacher in this district for 28 years. And I'm here to talk about PE class sizes and music and art. After talking to many of our PE teachers and elementary PE teachers, I'm here to say that this board will be hard-pressed to find any PE teacher willing to step before you and say that he or she can offer a quality program suited to fit the new state standards. PE teachers tell me the class sizes are too large to properly complete the testing required by the state. Our district allows some classes to go as high as 70 students in a class. This includes students with extraordinary needs such as ESL and special ed. This range of diversity makes good teaching practically impossible for even our most veteran PE teachers. I know that this board is going to make some decisions concerning PE, art, music, and large class sizes. Before you make any decisions, I hope you will be asking the teachers in these areas for their input. Without this critical teacher perspective, you'll be making decisions based on narrow perspectives that our students and teachers are going to have to live with for a long time. I am asking you to be judicious and not be swayed or alarmed by all the talk of financial doom and gloom. Keep asking the tough questions that you've been asking. We are a basic aid district, and you know what that means. Don't be swayed to make hasty decisions we will all regret down the road. Our district should offer its students the best programs that we can across the board. And if you must make cuts, be sure you start at the top. Finally, I wanted to show you a poster I have displayed in my classroom for several years since the last time PE, art, and music were cut. I'll read it to you because I think you'll appreciate it. It's colorful and creative. And I'll see if I can read this to you. It says, art and music are the drugs of choice for millions of kids. If we expect them to just say no to a chemical high, we must recognize the healing alternative, their own creativity. Demand and support the real anti-drug program, arts and education. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bruce. Are there any other members of the audience who may wish to discuss anything with the board during the public comment? If not, then we'll move on to reports by the student representatives. And tonight, we are pleased, and the board really does appreciate the students who come at this late hour to present and advise us what's happening at the school. And this is Chelsea Connor from Pacific Beach High School. Chelsea, please.
Thank you. First of all, Hannah Johnson, she's the normal speaker tonight. She couldn't attend because she's preparing for a mock trial competition, which we have tomorrow night and the night after that. So I'm glad to be here to fill in for her. Just about the mock trial competition. Tomorrow our defense is going against another high school, and then the night after that our prosecution will go, and they both start at 6 p.m. at the San Luis Obispo Courthouse. And that's been a lot of fun. We've gotten to participate in a lot of several scrimmages against various schools. San Ynez, we went to San Ynez and scrimmaged them. And we went to Santa Maria High, we met them at the courthouse. But we got to scrimmage several schools, and that's a lot of fun. So you might remember the shirt that Hannah Johnson brought last time. And that was the mock trial team shirt. But that our students themselves got to embroider. This was a product of our CTE program, the Career Technical Education. And this is an ongoing program, and we've had some help from Rob Appel from the Cotton Ball in Morro Bay. And with his help, we've come up with some new designs, and our school's purchased some embroidery machines, and he donated some software. So that's been a lot of fun for the students, getting a chance to make new designs and work with Rob. He's really great. And our YSEMP program, that just ended. And we had 13 students participate in that, and they've completed it and graduated. And part of that program, the students went on various job shadows, and several of them have been offered possible internships. So that was very successful. And that'll start back up again in March. in drama. Mr. Kirk is teaching Othello, and we'll be performing it later in the year. But we're also going to go see the PCPA production of Othello, and this was made possible by a TEACH grant. So we're very thankful for that. And the TEACH grant has also contributed to, we have a guest artist coming to teach at our school to teach ceramics for the art students. So, yeah, that's about it.
Chelsea, thank you very much. Any questions or comments by the board? Chelsea, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
And you, of course, can forego the rest of the meeting if you have other things that you might want to do. But thank you again for coming. We really appreciate it. The board may remember that we did move up board member reports or comments and staff or administrators' comments to this point of the agenda instead of the end of the evening, so we can start with anyone by removing your mic, as we did under the old system, or raise your hands or jiggle something. Mark, jiggling? Okay.
I'd like to take this opportunity to let the board know and let the public know that I did spend, it was last, not this last Sunday, but the Sunday before, Monday and Tuesday up in Sacramento, talking with our legislators and a bunch of other people about the budget crisis that public education is in. Spent about an hour with Sam Blakesley, about a half hour with Abel Maldonado, some time in a group session with Liz Hill, the budget analyst. Things are pretty bad. At least the picture they're painting is bad. But there may be some light up there. I also sit and represent this board at the ROP regional meetings, and Karen's sneaking out the back door, but Karen and I spoke after the last meeting, and both of us feel that career technology education is just becoming so important that we would like to request of the board that the board meeting following the ROP meeting, there be an agenda item for so that we can report to you on what happened at the ROP meeting. So if that doesn't work, I can do it during this time.
So what we can do is at the point in the meeting tonight when we discuss future agenda items, you can bring that up again.
Great.
Okay.
Now, the last thing I'd like to do, and Brad Parker had to leave tonight because he's not feeling well. I've been throwing a lot of stuff at Brad in terms of alternative energy, alternative cars, alternative means of transportation, and Brad has to sort of respond to that because that's what he gets paid to do. And it's been a lot of extra work, and I apologize to him, but I also want to thank him because we are starting, I guess, in the district, at least one school bus will be running on biodiesel, and looks like all of them will be able to switch over to a program where we actually be running greener and more efficient and less polluting the school buses right away. And we're going to be looking at some electric maintenance vehicles with a 50-mile range. And so for doing maintenance around the district, as we start replacing the fleet, it looks like we may have found some alternatives to fossil fuels. So that's good.
Thank you, Mark, very much. Any other board members? Chris?
Yeah, and I know I've communicated with the board members about this. At the California School Board Association directors meeting, we did talk a lot about the proposed budget cuts, and I would invite everybody in the audience and everybody watching to pay very close attention to those because they are very serious. The governor's proposing at this point about a 9% cut next year, which would devastate schools. And although we are a basic aid to school district, they'll find a way of getting their pound of flesh from us as well as they have in the past. I would invite people to go to the CSBA website. Up in the upper right-hand corner, I would ask you to go look at an icon that says school, something we can't afford to cut, that has links to various things that people can do and ideas that you can implement to tell the governor that you don't want to see our school budget slashed. Also, I believe there are links to the Ed Coalition web pages, and I would invite you to go look at the Ed Coalition web pages. By the way, the CSBA website is www.csba.org, csba.org. On the Ed Coalition web page, there are samples of ads that are going to be aired or are actually being aired in major media markets in opposition to the governor's proposed budget cuts. As I said in my letter to various board members throughout our Region 9, which is Santa Cruz, San Benito, Monterey, and San Luis Obispo counties, I think this is a budget that only Freddy Krueger or Edward Scissorhands or Sweeney Todd could love. And unless you're in those leagues, I would invite you to tell the governor, tell our local legislators that we won't stand for it.
By the way, CSBA stands for California School Board Association, and Chris is a representative for our district from this board and for the entire district in the state. Thank you. Adrian?
Power to the people. Chris sent out a letter that was really good. Everyone speak up. Speaking of power, I passed off this video. It's in like 6 minutes about photovoltaic installation. That's from NECA in Los Angeles and IBEW, electricians who are union workers and contractors who put this in, and it features a facility that's 144,000 square feet that's 80% powered by these panels. And it's pretty impressive how these produce 900,000 kilowatts per hour, and which is the equivalent of like 8,100,000 cubic feet of natural gas use. And they have equivalents for coal and fuel oil, too. And reduces in 1,638 pounds of sulfur dioxide, 3,250 pounds of nitrous oxide, which are ingredients of acid rain, or 1,540,000 pounds of carbon dioxide, which would not be released into the atmosphere using solar energy. And they talk about within 5 or 7 years, reducing energy bills like 85%. I think it's something to look into. And I gave you a case. I had opened it incorrectly, and I broke this little tiny thing. And I thought it was bad feng shui to give you a case that was... So I have another one for you. And maybe I'll pass it on to our president to look at on the way. Just to keep this alive, this idea, and maybe we'll have a future agenda item.
Okay. Thank you, Adrian. And Catherine?
Thank you. I've been asked to speak to all of you about the Save the Music in Our Schools concert, which is coming up on February 24th. This is the fifth annual, and it will take place at 3 o'clock at the PAC at Cal Poly. This is a benefit concert, and it will feature instrumental and vocal groups from Morro Bay High School and San Luis Obispo High School. This is very important, an important way to support the music in our schools. Children tomorrow will be given 10 tickets, and they're all going to be sent out into the community to sell those for $14 a piece. We'd love to pack the pack in support of music and music programs at both of our high schools. And also, we're looking for sponsors in the community. They would very much like to ask for sponsorship of $500 from any community organization or business that you might be affiliated with to help defray the costs involved. Ed Harris at edoasis@aol.com can be contacted, or you can just contact me and I'll put you in touch with them as well. And that's the same time as our accreditation visit, so we'll have to divide and conquer. Thanks.
Okay, Catherine, thank you. Seeing no other mics down, I think Mr. Miller.
I do have a comment. I think board members had some interest in the recent news articles about the processed meat and the issue of the FDA having pulled it. I'd like to assure the board that the history of that is that there's a meatpacking plant in Chino, California, that's the second largest processor of meat for schools in the United States. And there was a undercover animal activist who went in there with a camera and recorded that there were a number of cows being led to the processing that couldn't walk on their own, and that's a violation of the FDA protocols. And as such, there was some concern about the diseases that these cows may or may not have had. and the FDA ordered an immediate hold on all of the meat that came from there. We did have 35 cases of processed meat and 25 cases of meat patties from that plant. We have them on hold in our freezer and wait for the investigation that's going to be concluded by the FDA in the near future. So we, at 3 o'clock on Thursday, received the notification and the information, and we did not process any more meat after that.
Okay. Thank you, Russell. And that's reassuring, I'm sure, to a lot of people. Any other comments? We're good. I think we'll go to the next item, which is item number 4 that we're moving toward, and that's resolution number 080708 that I think Dr. Valentine is going to present.
I think in these budget times, one of the proposed budget cuts, which would certainly touch every school district in California and certainly touch ours as well, are cuts to special education. As the board is aware, school districts are obligated to provide the kinds of programs that children with special needs need, and there is no provision for whether you can afford or whether you can't afford. It's simply an obligation that school districts take and welcome and accept. Special education has been historically woefully underfunded. The federal government promised to fund 40% of the costs required under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, or IDEA. In a good year, we receive probably 10% of the funding necessary. The state fills in its 60%, and school districts have to provide out of the general fund the remaining funds to provide whatever program is necessary in the school district. The resolution before the board tonight brings that situation to the forefront and urges for California to take steps to seek full funding for special education in order to provide the best quality program for students both with disabilities and without.
Okay, thank you very much. Chris?
I'd like to move approval of resolution number 080708.
Do we have a second? We have a second by Ms. Dickinson. Are there any other comments or questions? Seeing none, we have a motion by Mr. Unger and a second by Ms. Dickinson. All in favor?
It's a resolution. We have to do roll call.
Roll call. Okay, thank you.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mrs. Dickinson? Mr. Millar?
Aye.
Mr. Spadafore?
Aye.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman? Dr. Eisengrath Rogers?
Thank you. I think that's 7-0. Next on the agenda is another resolution that I believe Dr. Valentine will start, but I wanted to ask, as I was feeling, or had been mentioned, Marilyn mentioned this to me also, this is a resolution that's actually the product of Chris Unger bringing it to the board's attention, and I was wondering if somehow we could share the stage in the presentation where you begin, and maybe Chris could either read it or add some comment to it relative to the importance of this.
I would defer to Mr. Unger's reading. I think the resolution speaks for itself.
Okay, thank you. Would you like to? Would you please do that?
Sure. Whereas California's more than 6 million students deserve high-quality schools with well-trained educators, small class sizes, quality instructional materials, up-to-date textbooks, and dynamic parent support. And whereas Governor Schwarzenegger's 2008-2009 budget proposal calls for massive and devastating cuts to K-12 students and schools by reducing Proposition 98 funding by $400 million in the current year and $4.4 billion for the 2008-2009, and whereas a $4.4 billion cut to Proposition 98 funding would mean laying off tens of thousands of teachers statewide and would also result in increases in class size, not to mention a further erosion of the support system for students provided by classified and paraprofessional staff. And whereas, under the governor's proposed budget, school districts in San Luis Obispo County would lose an estimated $2,100,000 in the current fiscal year due to mid-year cuts and $24,500,000 in the 2008-2009 school year due to the suspension of Proposition 98. And whereas, according to recent released reports and studies, California spends $1,900 less per student than the national average, seriously underfunding its public schools. And whereas the governor's proposed budget reductions are fundamentally inconsistent with the state's goal of improving student achievement at a time when our students are making progress toward meeting rigorous state and federal education standards. And whereas the Getting Down to Facts studies show that billions more need to be invested in education in California to ensure the opportunity for all students to succeed now and in the future. And whereas the $14 billion budget problem was not created by our students, and fixing the problem should not come at the expense of their educational progress and success. And whereas California voters approved and continue to strongly support Proposition 98 to protect schools and students from harmful budget cuts and to establish a minimum level of educational funding. And whereas the governor's budget proposal goes against the will of California voters. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Trustees of San Luis Coastal Unified School District strongly opposes the governor's 2008-2009 budget proposal and urges the governor and legislature to discuss all possibilities to solve the budget crisis, including new revenue sources and expenses. And hopefully this will be passed and adopted today, the 5th day of February, 2008.
Thank you very much, Chris. Do we have a motion and then a second, Mr. Unger, and then we can have a discussion?
I'd like to move approval of resolution number 090708.
I'd like to second.
Okay, we have a joint second.
I'll
which
defer
can,
to Mr. Buckman.
Okay, we have a deferral, and Mr. Buckman will provide the second discussion. Chris? Well,
I just would like to piggyback on the last resolution. The governor's proposed budget would cut $358 million from the current special education budget, which would be a double hit to education in California, because not only is the governor proposing to cut revenue limit sources, again, we'll get our pound of flesh undoubtedly, but then he's also proposing to cut special education funds and hurt our most needy and children. This is unacceptable to me, and it should be unacceptable to everybody.
Ms. Dickinson and then Mark.
I understand.
One of my students was sitting with me after school yesterday, and he goes, Mrs. Dickinson, what do you think about charging kids to ride the school bus? So I said, I don't think kids should be able to ride the school bus free. And we talked about, you know, students should have all the textbooks they need and beautiful facilities and small class sizes. We went on and on. If parents had to pay for kids to ride buses, and if we just said, you know, we need quality education, and we can only afford 6 months now of quality education because of the budget, people would realize maybe that and stand up. What I'm saying is people do want quality education and a full year and free bus rides. So the people need to stand up. When are the people going to rebel from this notion that we're not going to support education fully in our society? We need to support it fully.
Thank
all
you.
Of us together.
Thank you, Adrian. And Mark?
What's interesting to me is as I talk to people in the community, there are some people that are saying, well, you know, education takes 40% of the budget. Maybe we ought to be looking at that. And when I spoke to both of our representatives about the proposed budget cuts, both of them said, right out of the chute, I will not vote to cut education. And so I think this message needs to go up to Sacramento. Thank you, Chris, for the resolution. And I think we need to get more. And those are two Republicans. So there's a very strong message up there that they are not in favor of cutting education. And I think we need to get this message to the rest of the legislature.
Thank you, Mark. Dr. Valentine?
I would just add to this that California ranks 47th in per pupil expenditures for education. regardless of the percentage of the budget that folks may quote of 40%, we need to look around and realize that the states that we are competing with in terms of student achievement and for students' futures are expending far more than California, and virtually every state in the union is spending far more for California. So as we look at a $14 billion deficit, one of the last places that we need to look at is the education of children in California, which has already declined and declined and declined and declined. And it's about time for us to say we're not ready to decline any further. We're ready to go up.
Okay, thank you. And one thing also that Dr. Valentine had mentioned, he was at a recent conference, and to look at this in the much bigger picture, other than it's 40%, you have to see what the state spends on other programs that end up being above the national average, and not just use the 40% to public education. There are a lot of programs that are funded way above the national average, and that's really a mark of where California, our government, and our representatives places the funds that are available. And I don't believe that there is any more important funding need in California than public education, because children have one opportunity to go through this process, and it should be better funded, and this is a threat to the funding. So if there are not any other comments, I think I've learned my lesson well. Ms. Holmes, is there a roll call on this?
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Yes.
Mrs. Rogers? Mr. Spadafore?
Yes.
Mrs. Dickinson? Mr. Millar? The resolution is adopted unanimously.
Thank you. Next on the agenda is the item number 6, which we moved up to item number 4, which is the discussion and possible action regarding the issue of physical education exemptions. And I wanted to discuss a couple of items before we began. First, there are going to be quite a few people here, I think, speaking on this, although we only have 2 or 3 of these yellow sheets up here. So I would ask first, so we can have an idea of how many people in the audience wish to speak before the board on this issue, could you raise your hand? So we are with maybe 3 or 4 people? Okay. Thank you. And if you haven't filled out one of these yellow sheets, don't run for them right now. But when you do go to the microphone, please state your name so it can be we can write it down. And also, the rules of the board limit the public comments during these agenda items to 3 minutes. And since we don't have many people speaking tonight, but in case there's someone who spoke before you that is saying, or you would say the same thing that they would say, if you could tell the board that you support what that person said, and then indicate the points that you wish to make so we can make sure that we don't miss anything and not lose them in the repeated or the repetitiveness. So I think we'll begin with Dr. Valentine and then move forward to the public comments.
Thank you. Back in October, the board approved exemptions for student athletes from physical education for the period of time that they participated in athletics. That exemption is permissible under the education code and permits students who are engaged in interscholastic athletics the opportunity to either choose to take physical education or to choose to take some other academic or elective choice in the course of their high school programs. We've reproduced for the board the arguments that were presented back in October 16th, and we have shared with the board a brief background tonight, framing the question essentially as one of discretion, of taking a look at the requirements of physical education, of looking at the rigors of student athletics, and deciding whether or not at this point in time the board wishes to continue those exemptions into the future, or whether the board wishes to take some other course of action. We have received numerous questions regarding the physical education program and would like to provide a brief overview of where we are with respect to physical education, K-12 in the school district. We will try to keep that brief and then open to questions or discussion as the board chooses.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Matakovich will be carrying the presentation.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Matakovich. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Valentine. And thank you to Mr. Spatafor and Mr. Unger for providing staff with a series of questions, along with Mr. Buckman, that you asked staff to address. So taking the liberty to use your questions to guide this overview. All right? The first question is, are the district's goals regarding PE, what are they, and are they considered in our K-12 curriculum? Certainly they are. They guard our work, guide our work. The strategic plan highlights how important this is to our district, as well as our mission statement indicates that we will develop rigorous standards based upon the physical education program, which emphasizes lifelong physical fitness. So that's at the core of our operations in our school district. Our next question, how will the PE standards change our goal? Well, what's important here is that these standards are enhancing our goals to develop healthy students. They are influencing the programs that we provide our students to be more educated in the area of physical education. Third question, what goals, standards can be addressed theoretically, which ones only through physical activity? Well, at the K-8 level, we have five standard sets. As you see from the overhead, there are standard that are theoretical standards, as well as physical activity standards. At the high school level, they combine these five standards into three sets. I'd like to just briefly highlight the overarching standards for elementary and middle school students. For elementary students, standard one is primarily in the physical range. Students adopt motor skills and movement patterns needed to perform a variety of physical activities. Standard two focuses on knowledge of movement concepts, principles, and strategies as they learn to perform physical activities. Standard three, students assess and maintain a level of physical fitness to improve health and performance. Standard four asks students to demonstrate their knowledge of physical fitness concepts, principles, and strategies to improve health and performance. Examples at the K-8 level focus on nutrition as one area, and physiology as another area. Our standard five focuses on knowledge of concepts, principles, and strategies that apply to learning physical activities. They also extend at the 7 and 8 grade level to focusing on self-responsibility, social interaction, and group dynamics. At the high school level, we then move to three overarching concept standards. Students are asked to demonstrate knowledge and competency in motor skills, movement patterns, and strategies needed to perform a variety of physical activities. Standard two, students achieve a level of physical fitness for health and performance by demonstrating fitness concepts, principles, and strategies. And then standard three at the high school level, students demonstrate knowledge of psychological, sociological concepts and strategies that apply to the learning and performance of physical activities. And again, the emphasis on self-responsibility, social interaction, and group dynamics. The next question which the board is asked is how can this be addressed at the elementary, middle, and the middle school level, or only at the high school level? At the elementary school level, content standards emphasize the way students move through space and time in their environment, in the way in which students and a partner move in space together. the continuity and change in movement, the manipulation of objects in time through space, and the manipulation of objects with accuracy and speed. From the K through fifth grade level, the content is delivered incrementally to best enable students' learning at the appropriate developmental level. I share with you a sample of a first grade instructional calendar that will show you how, at the first grade level, activities are aligned to standards. As you see from the sample, they have a variety of activities that they work through their school year, focusing on establishing routines at the first grade level, through a long jump rope activity, to ball rolling, to then culminating with adventure activities. This is at the first grade level. I also am sharing with you a sixth grade example of the instructional calendar that our physical education teachers follow, moving from sportsmanship through playground games and expectations to physical fitness tests preparation, to modified games, to individual and group contests, and then at the end of the year to cooperative games, health-related fitness, and participating in the state fitness test as well. We then move on to a sample of the eighth grade instructional calendar as an example to kind of show you what the middle school content standards look toward. The emphasis is on working cooperatively to achieve a common goal, meeting challenges, making decisions, and working as a team to solve problems. This sample of the eighth grade instructional calendar aligns to standards through their activity units. If I may move on to the high school experience, this represents the culmination of physical education. When the student reaches the ninth grade, they're ready to integrate all that they know with what they can do. They become capable of higher order thinking and of more skilled performance. I've provided you a copy of the Course 1 instructional calendar that is aligned to the standards. And as you can see from the chart prepared, they have an orientation to their fitness personal plan, to dance aerobics, to experiencing badminton, track and field, table tennis, ultimate frisbee. The activities are wide, and the goal is through the activities to be able to address the standards. We also have a sample of Course 2, which shows the progression of our activities that become more complex. Again, we focus on the fitness plan that's provided our students to set goals and set challenges for themselves. We have a variety of activities from soccer to volleyball to basketball to, again, assessing themselves and their fitness plan. Again, these activities are aligned to the standards that were presented earlier. What we're realizing out of our physical education standards development are the results that we have from our physical fitness gram. We're showing that our students over the past 3 years have passing rates between 66% and 74% across all grade levels. This is where we're realizing students in the healthy fitness zone. We're proud of that. We're proud of the instruction that our physical education teachers are delivering. We see stable performance from the fifth grade to the seventh grade in 06-07. and some gains in 7th grade from 04-05 to 9th grade in 06-07. So we're pleased that we're progressing and we're providing a program that is demonstrating that through quality professional development in conjunction with Cal Poly's Kinesiology Department and the State Department of Education, our teachers are receiving instruction in physical education delivery, and this is an ongoing process over the next several years. Our K-8 students will be receiving 9 years of standards-based instruction delivered by PE specialists. We feel they're receiving a solid foundation in physical education. As you know, our K-12 PE program is evolving and developing. Our physical education teachers are participating in a very comprehensive physical education professional development program. It's a 5-level program. We're at level 2, which is in the area of implementing the standards and learning how to develop assessments for each standard. We have a ways to go, as do all other physical education teachers in the state of California. It's a process that we're committed to, and I'm proud of the results that we're accomplishing to date. But we've just begun the process in the last year and a half, and our teachers are committed to providing a quality program. Next question. Can we use existing curriculum at the high school and improve PE offerings to meet our goals and enhance the educational experience of our students? Yes, currently our PE teachers are developing our Course 1 and 2 program. Next year, we will be offering all 9th and 10th grade students Course 1 and 2. We have an elective program in physical education that goes beyond this core program. That program will be reviewed as we set our core program in place. If you look at the model standards that are provided by the state, there are wonderful opportunities to develop in the elective area. And we think once the core program is established that we will be able to go on and develop our electives to meet the challenges of the state standards. We feel that we need to understand those standards and in order to be able to move forward with an alignment with our sports program. The general observation is that there are some connections in our athletic program, but there's not a complete match. So we see that this will be an opportunity down the road that we can work through once the core program of physical education is in place at the high school level. We do have a variety of courses available to our students that emphasize aspects of the physical education program from which our students can choose. They range from healthy living to nutrition to physical fitness for health, weight training, ROP intro to sports medicine, ROP health care careers, field experience, health and family living. And we've also looked at our science and our history social science curriculum where we see objectives that show a connection to our physical education program. So we do offer a variety of courses that can complement the physical education program well. Yes.
I've sometimes thought that music classes, you know, you talk about social interaction and group dynamics. Mm-hmm. You know, if students have an experience of ensemble, doing something together where they're listening and working at exactly the same moment with other people, that's such a valuable experience in life, and that is in music classes. Mm-hmm. So I think there's an interface there also.
Very good. Next question, can PE standards be integrated with team sports to to aid in reaching our stated goals. As I stated earlier, our initial analysis of the athletic directors and their coaches to each team's objectives looks as though we have potential to align, particularly to course two, which is a course that promotes dual and team activities, and as well our physical education electives, once developed, might also align down the road. At this time, we're focusing on our core program, though, as I stated earlier. Next question, can professional development at this time, as far as the coaching staff being involved in that professional development program, if the coach is part of the physical education staff, they are participating. At this time, we have not incorporated our coaching staff into that process. I want you to be aware of that. Next question, can the PE program at our high schools be strengthened to benefit students? Of course, that's currently the case. And as I stated, we have an articulated program that's with a solid foundation of professional development. We also have been purchasing instructional materials, equipment, in order to support the instruction at the K-12 levels with our one-time money that we received from the state. Next question, what are the implications of starting team athletics after school? Well, moving PE athletics outside the school day would open up an elective for our students. However, it extends the day for the student athlete if we move it outside the day. It would not allow him or her to receive elective credit for the athletic elective. And right now, we're looking at from 2 to 3 hours a day participating in a sport. We're concerned about moving athletics outside the day in terms of retaining certified teachers to the PE athletic coaching ranks. Staff is enticed by participating, by delivering an athletic class in their teaching assignment. If it was moved outside the day, the question is whether or not the certified teachers would continue to participate as coaches. We also see that there's potential for a student to miss his or her last class of the day, given the fact that it's during the season of sport, some programs leave the last period of the day and they would be missing instructional time, possibly up to 3 times a week. So that would be a concern. In your packet,
I'm sorry, Dr. Matasha, there was one question that Chris wanted to ask.
I'm just curious about when you're talking about
given toward that.
So I'm just curious, so if a, and I want to be clear about this, so if a teacher at Morro Bay High School and a teacher at San Luis Obispo High School are receiving the same stipend for coaching a particular sport, then the teacher at Morro Bay High School is teaching after school, he's receiving the same stipend as someone at San Luis Obispo High School that is already being paid for teaching sixth period as well as coaching after school?
That could be the case if the sport is outside the school day, yes, at one school and not the other.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. We have Ms. Dickinson, sure.
According to this chart about comparing to other schools, it looks like several schools who have outside the day athletics do have certificated coaches, according to the chart. So it may not be that much of a problem.
Well, you know, and I was asked to provide, you know, to query our schools around the county as well as some comparable schools in our comparable school bands. And yes, some schools have it in and sometimes outside the school day.
So and some of them have teachers, though, teaching outside
correct.
The school. I have one more question about that. Why does it preclude elective credit to have it outside the school day if you had a certificated teacher doing it? Because there's like zero period and eighth period.
Well, it would be considered a class then, and then they would, it would be part of their teaching assignment, and they would receive the credit.
I don't know, but I think at other schools they do get some credit for that.
Well, for example, at Roy Grandy High School in Napomo, if you're an 11th or 12th grader and in 1 year complete two varsity sports, they give 5 credits for that participation. That's correct.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Catherine? And I also want to mention, too, so a couple people in the audience indicated they wanted to ask questions now, mm-hmm. but that's not going to happen until we finish the presentation. Then there'll be questions for the public at that point in time, mm-hmm. so we can move forward in some process. Catherine?
Chris, I'll be corrected, I'm sure, if I'm wrong, but I believe every class that qualifies for what we're discussing here that has a class during the school day, which is almost always the last period, also has that class continues to meet as a team after school. That's so correct. The stipend for that teacher would not necessarily be applied to the
and the teachers are not being paid to coach during the block schedule. Mm-hmm. So that was a question I had. Okay.
Yeah, we probably could get those specifics from the principals.
Okay.
Okay. Maybe we'll you have one more question that you wanted me to answer, and it had to do with will improve communication between the PE staff and coaches, improve our delivery of standards-based physical education, and we feel that we share a common purpose, and that is to provide a quality program to our students. The PE standards in our physical education courses as well as our athletic program can enhance communication between both groups of staff, our coaching staff as well as our teaching staff. We hope over time to develop a true understanding and appreciation of the value of physical education as well as the value of athletics, and that would be, we would continue to have that as a goal. Establishing collaborative meetings with physical education staff and athletic staff could result in a truer understanding of what each program is providing. We hope that by answering these questions that we've provided a base for you to be able to conduct the conversation around this recommendation, and that is to support the PE exemption recommendation.
Okay, thank you very much for the overview and the information. I'll ask if the board has any questions of Dr. Matakovich or anyone in the administration before we go and open it to the public for comments. Mr. Millar-Wall.
So I understand the staff recommendation is, among other things, to continue the exemptions in contained in Ed Code 51-242. Okay.
Okay. Any other questions? Mark, did you have a question now? Okay. Seeing no other questions, thank you again, Dr. Matakovich. The board will open it up to the public, and I'm going to call the names of the people who've handed in the sheet request to speak, and then if you haven't handed a name or a request in, when the last one's done, you can either come up in order, but then again state your name for the board and also into the microphone. The first speaker is Austin Peters, followed by Vic Eklund.
Auditory PE. I also had to take a zero period in order to have time for the electives in my schedule. I am a student who wishes to go to college, and I need time for my studies. This college world nowadays requires the best grades. It is difficult to balance my sports and my academics, but I work hard to do it. Many of my friends have been struggling to keep up with grades and play their sport. The PE exemption policy will help kids' grades, I feel. With a free period, I will be able to have ample time to study, to do my homework and study, due to the fact I miss periods a day for golf and football. I am asking you on behalf of myself and other fellow athletes to keep the PE exemption in force during the upcoming school year of 08-09. Thank you.
Austin, thanks very much for saying that. Mr. Eklund?
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen of the board. My name is Vic Eklund. I'm a physical education teacher and athletic director at San Luis Obispo High School. And I'd first like to commend the physical education departments at the elementary and junior high schools in our district for their exemplary work. Is a major reason why our children are so strong and healthy in both mentally and physically. We support them in everything they do. We admire the work and wish to prolong the healthy habits that they have inspired. It is for this reason, among others, that the majority of the physical education staff and all the coaches at San Luis Obispo High School support the exemption process as it and its related conditions. If we abolish the exemption process and every freshman and sophomore student-athlete was mandated to take physical education, there would be no room left for the elective programs within our physical education department. This means students would lose their opportunity to expand their physical education as a matter of choice. And worse than that, every student's participation in physical education would be forced to stop at the 10th grade with no chance to build on the skills and habits they have acquired at earlier ages. We support the exemption process because it is far less restrictive and far more progressive. The exemption process saves elective programs within the physical education department and allows the student a choice to continue through their senior year. Furthermore, the exemption allows approximately 780 student-athletes on our campus the opportunity to transcend everyday curriculum and advance their own education as far as individually possible. In theory, a particular sport specializes independently in terms of strategy on the field or courts. Likewise, relationships they build on a team are clearly more intense than those built in a classroom setting. Their relationships last for years rather than extending beyond one trimester. We favor the current exemption process not because it replaces physical education, but because it extends healthy philosophies, skills, and habits that we all want for our children while raising the level of achievement and nurturing success. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Eklund. We have Andrea Devitt, please.
Did he say he was representing
PE teachers? Yeah, Ms. Devitt.
It's actually pronounced Andrea.
Andrea, thanks.
Go as fast as I can, my 180 seconds. San Luis Obispo High School graduate, class of 86, bachelor's degree from Loyola Marymount University, master's degree in curriculum from what some people call the Harvard of the West, but I like to call Cal State University Dominguez Hills. I am former high school teacher, former high school counselor. I have a multiple subject credential, a social science credential, a PPS credential, and I'm currently employed at Cuesta College as a counselor, and I work in articulation and transfer for the University of California Office of the President. Doesn't that sound important? I have two kids in San Luis schools, and I'm a huge supporter of public education. I have an eighth grader who is really getting a great education from Mr. Morrow, and she got a great education from Mr. Otrondo. So my objective, per my hero, Madeline Hunter, is to convince the majority of the San Luis School District board members to vote in favor of using the exemption as allowed by state law. And why? These students who are on track for college can replace the PE requirement with an A through G requirement, therefore being more prepared to be successful in college. It's not about getting in, it's about doing well when you get there. And if they can replace it with an A through G requirement, they will do better once they get there. And if they are currently one of those, what do they call them, NCLBs, then they could take another academic course that will help support them to get them off the NCLB list. I'm disappointed that this has taken so much time and this has been like all these San Luis High parents who just want to get their kids out of PE versus the PE teachers. I don't think that's what, but I'm sure you're qualified. And then we could just move on and address other issues. Sorry if I'm telling you what to do. I do that a lot. It's something I need to work on. It's on the list. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you very much. I don't think anybody felt scolded or directed, but thank you for that.
Other people in my life do.
Was there anyone else in the public that wanted to speak to this issue? If you could come up and state your name, please.
Hi,
I'm Rick Ernstrom, and I teach a class that's not on the A to G requirement, but should be. My students should be able to get credit for art, for their woodworking, but UC doesn't see it that way, and Andrea and I have already had that conversation. I've been teaching at San Luis High School. This is my 39th year. Taking swimming outside the school day, I am sure, would have shortened my career. I've coached all those years but two. I'm still coaching. Even after I retire, I plan to coach. In that case, it won't matter whether it's outside the school day for me, but it will for the kids. Keeping electives available to the kids is important to the elective teachers, not just the academic teachers. We take away all those students from our elective program, it's going to put a hole in what we're doing. And whether it's art, music, industrial arts, or any of the others, we need to keep those moving. This has prolonged my career by having athletics inside the school day. And when it's not, for example, starting Monday, my day goes from 6 in the morning till 6 at night. And I don't feel bad at all taking my stipend for coaching. I will not be teaching inside or coaching inside the school day until the trimester changes. And I'll be with those kids clear till June. And I have 128 kids in at one class. Now, that's a pretty large class size. I have a lot of help the first 14 weeks. But after all the assistant coaches are gone, I have them all by myself at Sinsheimer. I noticed that when Dr. Matakovich was going through her list and reading all the things they do in ninth grade, she read over the one that said aquatics. You knew I was going to say this, didn't you? We have to share the pool with the city, and if we move athletics outside the school day, we're going to take our practice and squeeze it down very tight. We're already sharing with the local swim club. We have to share with the lap swimmers, and if we go completely outside the school day, our program will suffer tremendously. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Said, that sounded so sweet. Can you say that again? And then one of them said, yes, thank you. And they said, you know, our AP kids, they're taking three other AP classes, and they're usually in a club, and they're participating in a sport, and we miss our children. And those AP students that I usually teach, or all students, really, I mean, students like Austin, they do what they're asked, and they stay up as late as it takes, and I think they're losing a lot of sleep. I think this exemption saves their health, which is, I think, what we're talking about here. If we start practice an hour and a half later, after school, then I think they'll be engaged in athletic activity possibly from 2 in the afternoon till 7 at night, and then maybe 6:30 at night, something like that. That's 5 straight hours, and get their dinner and start my English homework at 8:30 if they haven't called their girlfriend or done their science homework or whatever. They're kind of pinched for time at there. I'm not even talking about the teachers, just the students. I think the student's going to have to choose between athletics or academics at some point, skipping practice or skimping on their homework. Or even worse, they'll skip more sleep, which is what the AP students will do. And it's, I think, their health we're concerned about. Without the exemption, I fear there's going to be a big divide opening up between athletics and academics. I think you'll see fewer teacher coaches. You'll certainly have more academic classes missed for road games, and you'll have student athletes forced, I think, on a daily basis, if not a lifetime basis, on whether they want to be a student or an athlete. As it is, with the exemption, we have hundreds of proud, hardworking student athletes. Please let our student athletes keep the hyphen in between student and athlete rather than a slash, and please let them have the choice of the exemption. In regards to your question, I think teacher retention is an issue, just talking to other coaches. That I think it's the same way with teachers, that teaching AP kids 4 periods and then coaching is leaving me with about 3 or 4 hours of sleep, and it's something that I'm getting a little old for. It saves us too. And in regards to getting paid double, you might be absolutely right. It hurts a little bit though to hear that, because I hear that all the time. No, it might be totally fair. I'm just
that's okay.
but so you know, that stipend ends up being, even after the school day, with the exemption, less than minimum wage, and I give half of that to my assistant coach. I'm working from 6 in the morning till almost midnight every day, and like I said, it could be completely fair, but it's still working out to about $4 an hour. So Thank you very much.
Thank you for that, too. And if you're feeling the pressure at your age, the rest of us are really going to be struggling. Thanks.
Excellent PE program. If you look at, I just want to present some numbers to kind of support that win-win idea. If you look at this year as our baseline for the future in terms of the student athletes in 9th and 10th grade, where this exemption would primarily land, this year we had 94 ninth grade students who would qualify for one exemption. That means they're playing one sport during fifth period, an athletic PE class. And eight students, ninth graders, would have qualified for two exemptions. So that means that you have, of our population of 385 ninth grade students, you had 290 or more of those ninth grade students would be taking two trimesters of PE, and 85 of them would be taking at least one trimester of PE. So 98% of all freshmen would be taking at least one trimester of PE, with the vast majority of those, again, 290 out of 385 would be taking two trimesters. I see that as a win-win. It's a win for the students who can choose the exemption. It's a win for the physical education in that we still have 290 students who would be taking two trimesters of PE. You can use the same mathematics at the 10th grade level. If you look at the enrollment in 10th grade, we'd have 146 students who would qualify for one exemption. That's, again, using this year's numbers, and 24 would qualify for two. That means they're playing one or two sports during fifth period. So the remaining 234 10th grade students would be taking two trimesters. I meant 122 would take one trimester. So again, you have 94% of all 10th graders who are taking at least one trimester of PE and or a trimester of PE and playing a sport. So I see that as a win-win. We have excellent PE teachers. We're working on developing a great standards-based program. We're seeing that there are connections between the PE standards and athletics. So I hope as you consider your vote on this that you'll think of it in those terms, not that one side's going to win and one side's going to lose, but that we can support both sides by maintaining a great PE program, by giving our parents and our students choices about their academic futures. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Will. More speakers. Mr. Zotovich from Morro Bay High School.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen of the board. Pete Zotovich, principal, Morro Bay High School. Just for clarification, the seventh period certificated coaches or teachers that teach the seventh period, that's one of their teaching periods. So it isn't that they're doing that on top of the five they're already doing. They do their four plus they do that. So I just wanted to
be able to do so. So if there are any questions now that you thought you might like to hear us answer, is now the time to do that?
You know, I think that what I would suggest is that if the board has any comments they want to make, you can certainly make them within the 3 minutes that we have. That's okay.
Do you understand what I'm saying? There would be these rhetorical questions, and I would say, hello, do you want us to answer that? And the answer was, no, you're not allowed to. So
no, the only thing I'm saying is if the board wants to use your 3 minutes to ask any questions, mm-hmm. that's their prerogative. But otherwise, I think that we'll move along and have a discussion.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much for being here. Any other speakers? I want to thank everybody who came tonight, and I also want to recognize the parents who were here at the earlier meeting last year, who shared their concerns, and also the voluminous emails that we received that all the board members read. And I want to thank you because this is your children's education and it's a public education. So I appreciate the teachers and the staff and the parents who are here tonight and have taken their time now and in the past to discuss this and other issues. So I think now that the public portion is finished, we would like to go to the board's comments and questions about the agenda item. Mr. Millar.
I'd like to thank everyone for the input on the emails, particularly Mrs. Ramsey and the committee's input. That was very helpful. Also, the website links that I received from a few folks. And I move the board's staff recommendation.
We have a motion made by Mr. Millar. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
We have a second by Mrs. Eisenhardt-Rogers. And before we take a vote, questions, discussions, Mark?
Yeah, I have, I guess I have several. First, in tonight's agenda packet, we have a reprint from the October 16th on page 4.4. It's the second paragraph down. and it was a question raised by administration. The background of the board's decision, however, is not entirely simple. In the past, we granted PE credit for PE athletics. This met the two-course requirement. Now we are considering exempting a student from attending courses in PE if the student is engaged in interscholastic athletics. It is unclear whether this eliminates the two-course requirement. I wondered whether we'd answered this question.
Dr. Valentine?
Yeah, what the staff recommendation is that there are two exemptions from physical education just by virtue of being 16 and a junior. What our recommendation is that for the student who has the equivalent of the PE requirement achieved either through exemptions in athletics or physical education, or both, as Mr. Jones was describing, was likely in many, many cases, that then that student would qualify for the junior and senior exemption if they wished to take it. They would still be taking the equivalent of 2 years of PE, either through athletics or through physical education, however.
Okay, thank you. More, Mr. Buckman, if you still want have a follow-up.
Okay. Well, I guess originally I was supporting this, and I am in opposition to this right now, and I have a couple of reasons for it. One is I was hopeful that after our October discussions that I would hear that there was a greater alignment between sports and athletics and the PE standards, and what I hear is that although we're moving toward that, we're not there yet, and that alone is very disappointing to me. Another thing that I have very serious concerns about is the fitness gram and the fitness test that students are required to take in ninth grade. It consists of six parts: aerobic capacity, body composition, abdominal strength, trunk extensor strength and flexibility, upper body strength and endurance and flexibility. I'm not sure how exempting students from some sort of PE or making sure that there's alignment is going to guarantee that our students be successful on the fitness gram. That's something that does concern me. There is a Senate Bill 601, that makes a recommendation, and the bill was chaptered, that, let me see if I can find this, it means that it is law. The governing board of a school district or the office of the county superintendent, with the consent of a pupil, may grant a pupil an exemption from courses in physical education for 2 years at a time during grade 9 through 12, inclusive, if the pupil has satisfactorily met any five of the six standards of the physical performance test administered in grade 9 pursuant to section 680800. I would propose, and I realize that we have a motion on the floor, but I would propose that any exemption be tied to...
Broken. On Chris's comments, rather than just taking it back to the...
Mark, they can't record it, so...
Well, it's not working. Thanks. On Mr. Unger's concept, as we move through this discussion,
that's not on either. Mark, hold on, just for
none of them are on.
Everything's
dead, none of them.
So we gotta wait for a second.
Kim, can I move back to the other side?
Mark, there may not be any benefit over there either.
Skills and develops motor habits, whereas the fitness grant and the concept of fitness talks about lifelong skills, body composition, body mass, things that are going to affect our students' health. I know I want my child to be healthy, what I'm going to try to do is actually add to Chris's thoughts and say, as we're going through this process, if we're going to grant exemptions, let's do it with some form of accountability, some something that says that, yes, these student-athletes, hyphenated student-athletes, have something to show that they've got this other part of this down. And the fitness band is really simple. I mean, some of this is just walk a mile and get timed in it. And all of these could be done so that each time a student comes forward and says, I would really like an extension from PE, we have a state standard for what we think is fitness for our students. And I would propose that as I come forward and say, you know, I really want an exemption, and I'm willing to, I know the students have to come forward and take, they have to take a drug test, because that's right at the point. This day, there's something that they come back to the campus and do in order to be on the team.
No.
They come forward, that some time is spent with their coaches or with
the light of the universe.
I'm going to talk loud, not because
we're not going to do that.
Animated, but because I'm trying to be heard. The exemption for passing 5 of 6 fitness gram exercises, it's really interesting. The reward that the student gets is an exemption from physical education for 2 years. They're told you're good enough to have this exemption for some period of time. For the student who doesn't pass 5 of 6, there is no consequence. The student has a 20-credit requirement, whether they pass the fitness gram or whether they don't. And I guess where I'm going with this is to impose that the student-athlete must, in addition to being a student-athlete, pass physical fitness while in addition to being an athlete is putting on a greater consequence for not passing the physical fitness test than the physical education student has. And again, I think the question that's being addressed here is whether the board, and I understand there's a difference of opinion here, but whether the board is at a level that believes that the physical education requirement for the student athlete is so essential that you just can't waive it, or whether the student athlete has approximated the physical education requirement to a level where some kind of choice is permitted, and certainly the education code allows that kind of discretion.
Okay. Ms. Dickinson was next because she was waiting for Dr. Valentine to provide that.
Well, I have more. I don't think any of the mics are
on.
Okay. I have more to say about this, but I think the school district has a responsibility to keep the athletic programs and keeping the students' health and personal growth. And I would like to see practices limited to 2 hours a day. I'd like to see a requirement that all students on the team get playing time, no matter what the win-loss record is. If we're going to try to achieve things like how to be on a team and develop physical fitness, you're not going to get it sitting on the bench.
But you know what I want to just add right here? I don't do this very often,
okay,
but it's not within the discussion of the exemption.
In the context of that, though, because with these responsibilities, freedom comes with responsibility. So I would be in favor of freedom for athletes, but I don't like to hear that we're not.
But I think your concept is correct in terms of the overall responsibility and the goals of a student athlete.
I don't think you forget the context and the ramifications of the decisions.
Now I think we have Chris and then Mark.
I'm going to hold off on my comments.
Okay, Mark.
I'm going to come back and try to.
You're going to have to project.
I'm going to come back to the concept that holding student athletes to a series of 6, they have to do, you know, sit-ups, they have to do a couple of push-ups, they have to do a trunk lift, they have to do a curl-up, they have to do a 1 mile run or a walk test, and they have to be checked for body composition. I don't think that holds them to a standard that is onerous. I think the law that changed this year, by the way, it's not the law that's in the agenda packet, the law was made more stringent in terms of every other exemption, and it says, there we go. Okay, could everybody turn your microphones on? Just one small part of the law that changed this year, that's not part of the student athlete exemption, but refers to all the other exemptions, says that the governing body of a school district or the office of the county superintendent of schools or county, with the consent of the pupil, and this is what was added this year by the legislature, may grant a pupil an exemption from this, actually Chris read this, from courses in physical education for 2 years at any time during grades 10 to 12 if the pupil has met satisfactorily 5 of the 6 standards, five of these 6 standards of the fitness gram. I think that's ed code, but there is another exemption that we're dealing with that says if it's a student athlete, because you're a student athlete, you can apply, and you it's waived. So what I'm asking to do is, in fact, I'd like to make an amendment to the motion.
No, you can't do that yet because it's not the motion that's on the table right now. So what can happen, if I'm correct, and Kim can help me with this, is we have a motion, we have a second. To amend that motion, you could make the request, but the original person who made the motion has to.
And I understand your concern about that, and that since this is a class during the school day, it should be held to the same standards. It sounded to me as though what Dr. Matakovich was describing was an evolutionary process, that we're trying to get all of our PE classes to be in alignment with these standards. I wonder if you'd be satisfied with charging Dr. Matakovich's office with exploring for the future how we could make sure that our athlete classes, that's the right thing to call them, can also conform and align with these standards, but allowing this exemption to go forward now and allowing it all to go on the same track in this evolutionary process.
Well, first, before you comment about that, it has to go to the motion that Mr. Millar made, and then we're going to take a vote. And any other comments about that motion? If that motion passes, then it passes. If it doesn't pass, then there may be another motion after that. But we have to keep ourselves on the track that we're moving forward, not sideways. Thank you. Adrian.
I remember reading on one of those laws that... Hello?
No, we're not working.
Anyway.
I would not take the fact that your microphone dies personally, but...
I don't. That students, this doesn't mean, it seemed like one of those laws we read stated that a waiver like this doesn't mean that the school day can be shorter. The student can just opt to have a shorter school day because they don't have a PE requirement, just so that we're all clear on that, right? That was in one of those things we read.
Dr. Valentine?
Yeah, I'd need your citation. I'm not aware of that. Students in their senior year are allowed to take shorter days.
I just wanted to clear that up because I thought that was in something that we were handed out to read. Where was it?
Well, there. Yeah.
It's in the parents' handout.
There's
just to be
nobody
clear
in the 9th or 10th grade is taking shortened days, but there is a shortened day option for seniors. Am I correct?
Does that answer your question? Adrian?
Well, just relying on the fact that 9th and 10th graders can't. But can they not take PE in 9th and 10th grade? Do they have to take it in 9th and 10th?
They can take PE in 11th and 12th grade.
But they can't defer PE to 11th and 12th? They don't have to. So they could just not take PE in 9th and 10th.
That is correct.
And so if they're a 12th grader doing...
Two pathways to do it. One is to take 20 credits of physical education. The other is to take the equivalent in PE athletics, which resulted in an exemption, or some combination of the two.
Okay. Any other comments or questions before the vote on the motion that's before us? Marilyn?
Well, this is an interesting discussion that we're having here. I originally, the first time this came up, I voted against the waiver.
Exemption,
rather, pardon me. but I've given a lot of consideration, and given that if I understood Mr. Eklund correctly, and so please correct me if I'm wrong in my understanding, but your position was supported by PE teachers and the total PE staff. And all the coaches. Okay. I am inclined to support the exemption now because I believe that the kids are getting enough physical activity and, let's see, how can I put this? It may not be exactly aligned with the standards, but I think that we can make headway towards aligning the athletics with the PE standards. As has been stated tonight by Mr. Bedrigian, his belief is that we have upwards of 70 students in some PE classes. I don't personally believe that to be factual. But if we exempt out some kids, we will certainly lower whatever our ratio is to the benefit of the students that are in the PE classes. I've gone back and forth on this one really a lot, but at this point, I'm inclined to support the motion as it was presented.
Argument for us to continue a well-thought-out exemption program, and it's really why I'm being a little bit hardcore about maintaining the motion, just because, you know, we can nuance this thing to death, but let's remember the underpinning issue is choice for students and parents. And I think the recommendation guides that process of exemptions. I have confidence in the parents and students understanding what it is they're being exempted from. And I also think they happen to be a group of students who probably need the grueling physical fitness graph less than perhaps anyone else does. So that's why I'm sticking with my guns.
Thank you. I wanted to also indicate that I voted for the exemption last year, and I'm going to vote for it again now because I believe strongly that the application of the standards for physical education is not a high school issue solely. It's a school district issue. And I think that the basics and the foundation for lifelong health and physical education begins in kindergarten and can be better established for children from K through 8. And I think by the time you've gone K through 8 and you have a terrific physical education program, which I think we do in this district, at that point in time it becomes a parent and student decision regarding which classes, those being elective, that you should be taking in high school to pursue your interests, and that a parent has as much responsibility as a student or as an administrator or as a teacher has to beginning the ninth grade to assist their child to maintain and continue that education they had K through 8 for their physical well-being and lifelong health. I think mandates, whether they be from the federal government or the state government, to implement programs may be very, very treacherous to follow, because what that does is it limits the choices that parents and students have at a point in time where they should have more choices, where teachers, electives, students, and parents should be able to choose what they believe is best for their children. And I think once we get to high school, we're at a point where those decisions should be made, and I think the exemption is important, and it also allows the local school board and the community. And we've heard from a number of parents, we've heard from a number of teachers, both who are physical education teachers and who are coaches and physical education teachers, that the programs we have at the high school benefit from the program that goes K through 8. Because if it hasn't happened by ninth grade, the opportunity to teach those basic understandings of physical education, the likelihood of those taking hold may be less and less all the time. So I'm in full support of the exemption.
So just before my fellow board members take this vote, what I'm hearing as I listen to everybody speak is that this discussion really is no longer a matter of yay or nay on this issue. What I hear is there's a few of us that would like to add one component that will make this a better program, and that's what we're talking about here tonight. I'm not hearing anybody really talking about yes or no, thumbs up, thumbs down on the program. Just item number two, with two words, could make this a stronger program.
Let me, are there any more comments? Thank you. Okay, well, if there's... No, I don't want to respond. I think that's a good point. What I want to do is call for the vote. I want to call for the vote unless there's any further comments. And if Mr. Millar is following the motion that he made earlier without any modification, then we have a vote now since there are no further comments. So relative to the motion that Mr. Millar made, and that was seconded by Catherine Eisenreich Rogers. No further comment. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
I believe that the vote is 5-2, that the exemption as set forth on page 6.1 is to be followed by the district. And then let's just get to that point first. And it's a 5-2 vote at this point. Mr. Unger.
I would like to make a motion to add that we require accountability by adding a 5 of 6 fitness gram requirement for the exemption. And secondly, I'd like to require that by a certain date, and I'm not going to specify that date right now, that the district come back to the board with assurance that standards for PE are in alignment with the athletics, so that I can personally be assured that our athletes...
And a new agenda item to consider that, because the public has the right to come back and discuss it or deliver comments to the board. Now, I may be wrong, and I'm not saying it. No, it's not so much. I mean, it's not individually. I'm just asking... That's my understanding, that if there is another motion, another item, that it has to come back and the public has to have an opportunity to comment.
Then when we have an opportunity to, then when we do advanced agenda, we'll talk about it at advanced agenda.
Okay. Thank you. So I think we are finished with item number 4, which was the PE exemption. And I, again, appreciate everybody's comments and input from the public and the staff. And there's been a request for a 5-minute break, so we'll resume at 9:30. Now for all the true supporters of public education who are still here. Okay. Okay, don't rub it in. Next on the, I'm going to call everybody back so we can continue and sidebar discussions after the meeting. Thank you. Status of the state budget, Mr. Miller.
Well, this is going to be an easy one. In light of the board members' intimate knowledge of what's going on in Sacramento and the reviews that we've been given already tonight, I don't have too much more to add. I would only like to stress that the Ed Coalition, which is made up of the multitude of alphabet soup organizations, has adopted a stance of unforgiving aggression against the governor's proposals to adamantly deny them and argue and fight them into the bitter end. It is a stance that I think is representative of how onerous the governor has made his proposals, and it calls for a very aggressive and continuous campaign. I would I would just point us in the direction that the call to action that Chris referenced in terms of letters is a highly effective grassroots solution to this problem. When we did this to Gray Davis 5 years ago, they are governor himself and let him know that he's gone down the wrong road when it comes to trying to cut the heart out of educational funding.
I'm just going to say 1 second. Let Dr. Valentine finish the presentation, then we can go into questions.
Pardon me, Adrian. Let me, if I could, I just want to add into that that a comment was made earlier that we are basic aid and we all know what that means. I'm not sure that we all know what that means. We, as a basic aid school district, we have some differences in funding. We are dependent on our resources on two things. Number one is real estate revenues, and number two is categorical state funds. Everybody knows what's happened to the real estate market. Everybody knows what's happening to state categorical funds. We are also potentially in line for perhaps other kinds of potential cuts that could come our way, and in line for a great deal of pain. And the last thing in the world we want to communicate is that somehow by being basic aid that we are in any way, shape, or form immune from the catastrophe that's happening at the state level. We are dead center of it, and we are locked arm in arm both with the revenue limit school districts and basic aid school districts in California in uniform opposition to what is happening to the children of our state.
Okay, thank you. And then Adrian, and then Mark.
Just in along your, the lines of your thought, Russell Miller, about the, I think the Amnesty International Urgent Action model is a good one for that, where they have, like if you go on their website, there's different urgent actions, and they propose letters. Of course, you can write your own, but here's a model letter, and it could be in like school newsletters, couldn't it? Here's a model wording, a possible wording, if you want to. I mean, and you can use it if you want to. Then not everyone has to make it up. In fact, even maybe on our website, you can just download it and, you know, put your name on there and from the school website. So a really, that makes it so easy to send letters in because you don't have to write them.
Okay. Mark?
Okay. It, this kind of follows on what Adrian's saying. Part of the time that I was up in Sacramento was with the Parent Teachers Association, the PTA. Only four of our schools in our district are not PTA. At the PTA website are sample letters, sample resolutions, sample press releases. The PTAs in our district are primed and ready to go.
Have not in the past risen to the level of some districts' revenue limits. And that in spite of our status as a taxpayer-supported school district, our revenues are still significantly below those of the average of schools throughout the United States. So,
thank you, Chris. Any other questions or comments for Mr. Miller or Dr. Valentine? Seeing none, we have next the autism program update presented initially, prepared by Jackie Kirk-Martinez and Michelle Sneed. Thank you.
Good evening, board and members of the audience. Thank you for giving us this opportunity to give you an update on the district's autism program. First, I'd like to start with a little background. San Luis Coastal provides intensive behavioral interventions for students who are on the autism spectrum who require unique behavioral interventions. When a student is on the autism spectrum and the IEP team determines that a student is unable to progress without behavioral supports, the student might require the support from a specialist in the area of autism. Previously, San Luis Obispo County Office of Education provided this autism specialist. This year, we have transitioned those services to our district. As you recall, the board approved through the strategic plan a program specialist for autism, and it's my pleasure to introduce Michelle Sneed.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jackie. When I was hired, the County Office of Education Autism Supervisor and I began a transition plan which started during this last summer. We continued transitioning for the first 2 months of school, which meant overlapping, observing, and meeting as a collaborative team as I began building a relationship between myself and our district school sites and families. During the summer and continuing through the school year, I've had the opportunity to work very closely with Autism Partnership, our lead consultant. Autism Partnership and myself are dedicated to building capacity throughout San Luis Coastal. By this, we mean we are throughout our county. We have disseminated this information district-wide to Tri-County's Regional Center, to the County Office of Education, to parent support groups, and in local school site newsletters.
A little bit more of some of the history. In your packet, you've received the graph on the back page of the agenda item. And it shows that in the year 2000, nationwide, one in every 500 people were diagnosed on the autism spectrum. In the year 2007, December 2007, national research shows that one out of every 150 people are currently diagnosed on the autism spectrum. It is the most widely studied disability currently in the nation. We currently have 46 students in our school district on the autism spectrum. When I calculated this, San Luis Coastal is one student below the national average. Back to our other accomplishments so far this year. Thank you, Michelle. We have resolved potential litigation this year at the lowest level possible, the informal level with parents and the IEP team and myself. This was a goal that started last year. We've held many professional development training opportunities on a variety of topics related to autism spectrum, behavior, instructional strategies, data collection, and coordination of services. These trainings have been well attended, including general education teachers, counselors, speech therapists, special education teachers, special ed paraeducators, and parents and our administrators.
Regarding training of special education paraeducators, our specialized comprehensive defensible training program is both multimedia and multimodal through live interactive training by skilled district staff, videotaped or digitally recorded expert presentations on a variety of specialized topics, and online computer modules. All of this training is further supplemented by a professional resource library available to the relationship. I'm honored the board has given me the privilege to engage in such important work for the children for which we are directly responsible.
The district's continued goal is providing a program for students on the autism spectrum to build capacity, continue to foster positive working relationships with our community and our parents, and decrease litigation. This concludes our formal presentation of an autism update, and the board is welcome to ask us questions.
Yeah, thank you very much, both of you, for that. And I think, Chris, did you want to be Walt? Thank you.
Hi, welcome. Testing. Oh, good. Michelle, welcome aboard.
Thank you.
And for either of you, where are the other 29 students to whom we are not providing services who are in our district?
Because autism is a spectrum, those 29 students are on the spectrum where the site support is adequate to provide progress for the student. We don't only have Michelle providing autism support services, but we also have social skills groups running at different sites, and we also have during the school day lunch clubs and peer groups, and those are sufficient services for those students who are not being directly supervised by Michelle.
And I don't know the best way to do this. I recently read some updates on the genetic component to autism.
Walt, I don't think you might be on.
It's in the ON. Is on? Okay. And it, whatever way would be the easiest to provide that to myself and other board members who are interested, I would be interested in knowing where we are on understanding autism, diagnosing it in that regard.
You're interested in not the cause, but where we are in diagnosing the educational diagnosis?
I guess mine is perhaps from a lay perspective. It's the burgeoning numbers and the genetic link that caught my attention initially. So I'm also interested in the cause. I didn't mean to just from our district's diagnostic and treatment perspective, but sort of more background information for the board so we understand.
Can Friday update?
Yeah, we can share that through the update.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Chris?
If you can determine the cause of autism, you get the Nobel Prize. And actually, it's interesting to tantalize you for the 2008 CSBA conference. We're going to have a strand on special education, and I'm going to plan on offering up a whole morning on autism as my contribution to it. I have a question. How much is our contract with Autism Partnership annually, and then do we have multi-year costs, and what do we project out our multi-year costs for that? Do we see them increasing, declining, those kinds of questions?
Do you want to transfer that to Mr. Miller?
The Autism Partnership, I don't remember exactly what the contract is, but it's a multi-layer contract that has a component for professional development. It has a component for individualized oversight of specific students. The dollar amounts I'll be happy to get you, but I'll need to look them up and break it down for you. The multi-year piece, I think we would have to talk about how we're going to be using them in the future, but we'll get you all of that technical pieces on the Friday update, if that's okay.
Question?
To memorialize, though, what Autism Partnership's first meeting was with us as a district is building capacity, and they said, we want you to become independent of us and FADE so that they're basically out of a contract. And we have seen that come to fruition with the intensive training and support that Michelle, as well as our other program specialists, have been receiving, and the independence that some of our school sites are taking.
So we do have a written plan with Autism Partnership on benchmarks for FADEing their programs?
No, we have not written multi-year. We're getting through this transition year, and we would be happy to, and in fact, it's a fabulous idea to have a multi-year FADE plan.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Catherine?
I'm sorry, this will be quick. Is it possible that this trending is going to continue in that direction, or are we leveling off now? This was a result of better diagnosis, or do we have reason to believe this increase will continue?
Jury's still out on that, and if we can find...
physical basis that this spectrum of issues was originally thought to be an anomaly, and it has now become a trend, and that trend... statistically is expected to continue until such time as the diagnosis gets tighter and more able to be dealt with. But as Chris says, you come up with the reason, you come up with a Nobel Prize, almost certainly.
Okay. And also, Michelle, welcome, and thank you for bringing your experience and talents to the school district and working with Jackie and everyone else in the administration. And I just wanted to mention that I was heartened, and I'm really very glad to hear how many times you talked about the partnership and the collaboration with the parents and the experts, the providers, and the staff and the teachers, because if both the at-home efforts along with the program efforts are cohesive and coherent, that'll be a big step to avoiding a lot of issues and helping the student progress. So thanks for that. I was very happy to hear that. Dr. Valentine.
Just very quickly, one of the concepts that we shared with the board as we brought this forward, and I think has been shared tonight, is that we believe that by increasing the local control over the program, we would have sort of two side effects, two benefits that we would realize. One would be simply because of the local control, a greater ability to be responsive to our own kids in our own program. And the second one would be that by having a more direct relationship with our kids and their parents, that we would also realize fewer conflicts and lower litigation costs. The jury is always out on that second piece, but at least so far it looks like we're achieving both goals.
Okay, thank you. Adrian?
And LuCMR, we have autism partnership too, and we had all staff two-day workshop where they paid for our subs for 2 days for instructional assistants and teachers, counselors, and school psychologists, and parents were invited. One of my parents was there. But I had thought that it would be great if administrators came. Did you have administrators attend yours?
Yes, we did. And the two-day training that LuCMR had was a collaborative with San Luis Coastal, and the participants were San Luis Coastal and LuCMR.
No wonder staff. I saw friends there.
And
it was a big thing. It was really good. Yeah,
it was.
And special assignment, Eric Jarvis and others, I'm sure. The district received a federally funded Enhancing Education Through Technology grant to the tune of almost $380,000 to support our 4th through 6th grade programs with the use of enhanced technology. And part of the RFP included the need for technical support, and we've identified that support to be a computer technician. The recommendation is to have the board hire or grant the hiring of a 0.8 computer tech. This would go to the Personnel Commission for classification of the position, but to grant a 0.8 computer tech solely from the grant funds. This would be a limited term position. At the point that the grant fund runs out, the position would run out, and so there would be no general fund expectation. It costs about $50,000 for the year and a half of the duration of the grant, and available for any questions.
Okay. I think some of the information you gave answered some questions that might have been pending. Any comments or questions for Mr. Robinette, Dr. Valentine?
Not for Rick, but just wanted to point out that one of the directions that the board has pointed staff in is in the direction of enhancing revenues. And again, a tremendous amount of credit to all the people that Rick mentioned, but Eric Jarvis, our teacher on special assignment, talk about earning your salary. He drafted this grant and brought in $377,000, all of the technology equipment that went into it, plus the funding of the support that we're requesting tonight. All were additional revenues that have been brought in.
Other questions, comments? Also, that's money based upon the hard work by everyone that's mentioned, Dr. McTakovich and Mr. Jarvis, that isn't affected by the budget cuts, so we can be thankful that there's a program that can be initiated or supplemented without worrying about that happening. So thank you.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Rick. The action consent, I feel that we can expeditiously move. We have a vote to make.
We can take action.
Okay, I apologize and pull back. Would anybody like to make a motion regarding Mr. Robinette's presentation and the recommendation at the bottom of page 7.1?
I'll make a motion as long as Mr. Millar doesn't amend it.
I don't know if we can guarantee that, but we have a motion. We have a motion by Mr. Buckman, and do we have a second?
Yeah.
And it's dying because there's no second? I'm shocked.
Oh, I'll second.
Mr. Millar? Want any of the action consent items to be pulled? Pulled. Number 8, approval of certificate and classified personnel items. Number 9, approval of proposed revisions to board policy 1312.3, uniform complaint procedure. I pull that. Number 10, approval of proposed new board policy 4031, reasonable accommodation, second reading. Number 11, acceptance of donations.
Pull
twice. Catherine and Marilyn. Number 12, disposition of surplus property. Number 13, approval of furniture and equipment requests. Number 14, approval of purchase orders. Number 15, approval of warrants and payroll. I have to pull that because I have to exclude myself from the vote, so that's pull. Number 16, approval of grant application. Pull. Number 17, appointment to SELPA Community Advisory Committee. Number 18, approval of revised joint use agreement with City of San Luis Obispo.
Pull, please.
Number 19, approval of out-of-state field study trip, Morro Bay High School Band, a cultural musical tour, Washington, D.C.
Okay.
It'll be easier to deal. No. We have a motion before us on numbers 8, 10, 12, 13, 14, and 17. Would somebody make that motion? We have a motion by Mr. Buckman. Do we have a second?
Awesome.
By Mr. Unger. All in favor of those? Opposed? It passes 6-0. Mr. Millar is absent. Now we have number 9, uniform complaint procedure that I pulled. And the only reason I pulled that was I wanted to ask the administration if there would be a sentence in there indicating publication of the person who would be the recipient of any complaint or concern under that uniform complaint procedure, that it would be published. I could do this one.
Yeah, our ARs that are attached to this policy designates who our complaint officers are in the district. We actually have 4 individuals, and so when we send home our parent information, it's in that. It's included
okay.
in that.
I just wanted to clarify
student
that
handbook who receives the complaints.
Okay, thank you. Because one of the problems in the past with these have been that the people who need to be addressed or assisted don't know who to go to. Mm-hmm. So I just want to make sure that it's published and communicated well. Thank you for that. I make a motion to approve number 9, seconded by Ms. Dickinson. All in favor?
Aye. In this case, I'm noting here that Los Osos Middle School received $500 from Diana Barnhart, representing her donation of a cash award presented to her from San Luis Obispo Republican Women Federated. We all recall that Mrs. Barnhart is a former California State Teacher of the Year who teaches here at Los Osos Middle School and gives selflessly of herself and her time to her students. She's much loved, and I just wanted to mention that she also has given of the monies that she received from Republican Women Federated. So that said, I'll move approval of item 11.
We have a motion to approve.
May I make one comment first, please?
Oh, sure. Oh,
yes, I'm sorry.
Sorry, Catherine.
Likewise, I'd like to thank everyone who made a donation, but I just wanted to take a moment to acknowledge PG&E's campaign for community and their employee matching gift program. And I wanted to point it out as an example of the coalitions that we talked about when we came back from San Diego that can be formed between the school district and businesses and individuals in our community. And this is a way where it's like a threefer. We have an individual who's making a contribution, an employer that's matching it, and it benefits the school district. So I want to commend PG&E for that program.
And Catherine, would you like to make a second to Marilyn's motion?
Yes, absolutely.
Marilyn has moved the motion on number 11. Catherine seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Now we go to number 15, approval of warrants and payroll. I had to pull that because I have to recuse myself because Deborah Spadafore is being compensated for services provided to the district. So everyone else can move on that.
I move approval of item number 15.
Is there a second? Marilyn second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So we have 5, 1 abstention, 1 absent. Now we go to number 16, approval of grant application for gifted and talented education entitlement.
I just had a quick question about this. It sounds like we're applying for this because we're going to have to give money back, so we better get some money so we can give some money back. And the deadline was really June 15th, but I'm just curious why we didn't apply for it anyway. I mean, do we do this every year, and why wouldn't we?
Well, initially, we looked at our...
By Marilyn. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 6-0. Now we're down to, I believe, number 18, approval of revised joint use agreement with City of San Luis Obispo.
Yep. I asked this to be pulled because in recent discussions with some of the youth athletic programs, they're finding that the city is telling them that the time that will be available on Damon Garcia will be less and less. It's right now it's down 15%, and they're thinking of shutting it down, shutting those fields down less. That means it's going to be more and more impact on the school district. And I think that we ought to note that and look to preserve our own fields as well.
So what was that last comment? You said look towards.
Look to preserve our own fields as well.
We do that in our managed care of everything. We don't put our fields at risk, and we've actually shut down Holt Field for any other outside activities for a period of time in order to preserve the field. We can't control Damon Garcia, but we do control our own. Youth Sports Authorities has a standing committee that addresses the usages of our field. We work with them very closely, and we have shut down fields before for overuse.
Okay, so this wasn't just a trick to get you to say that, but this is a plea to the community because we need more. We still need athletic fields in this town,
and
there's different. I can think of youth rugby just can't even find a place to practice at this point in town.
That's right.
So,
thank you very much, Mark. Any other comments upon that item number 18? If not, would someone like to make the motion?
I'll make a motion.
Motion by Mr. Buckman, second. Second by Catherine. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 6-0. Last item, approval of out-of-state field study trip, Morro Bay High School. Marilyn?
Well, I just wanted to note that this item refers to if Morro Bay High School band is requesting permission to attend the cultural musical tour in Washington, D.C. from March 13th through 17th, 2008. Students will be touring the National Monuments of Washington, D.C., and will have the opportunity to attend a rehearsal of the President's Marine Band. They will also attend the evening concert of this band. The students will be meeting with Major Jason K. Fettig, one of the conductors of the President's Marine Band. Now, that's all very interesting, but the reason I pulled... And I wanted to point out the ways in which they do so through the sales of Christmas trees, poinsettias, and ads for their Performing Arts Center concerts. Would ask people to support them because they are really doing this themselves. That said, I will move approval of item 19.
We have a second by Adrian. And are there any more comments before we vote?
And I just wanted to point out that I've been fortunate enough to be able to go on a couple of these trips, and the experiences that the students have and the learning that the students can get during these things just can't be gotten any other way, and it's a fantastic experience, and I appreciate everything that our students and their parents and Mr. Bellier has done to get our kids to be able to do these things.
Well, I second that. So we have a motion by Marilyn and a second by Adrian on item number 19 of action consent. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 6-0. And before we go on to the advance agenda, Kim, we went quickly. Did the motions and the seconds? Great. Thank you so much for doing that. Item number 21, advance agenda, and I know Chris and Mark have something.
I'm going to ask that we bring back the PE exemptions and that we have a further discussion on accountability for the exemptions and I'd like to also get bring back as part of that agenda item assurances that our athletic programs have alignment with the PE standards, and perhaps even be able to give our students credits if they can be PE classes. So
thank
I would
you.
Ask that we bring it back and have that further discussion.
And since it needs a second board member, I'll be that second board member.
Okay. Is that clear and clarified in terms of what Mark and Chris are requesting?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Thank you,
Chris. Thank you, Mark. And you're welcome. And any other?
Solar cars are not.
Yes. Okay. Hearing none, I think we're in a position to seek adjournment. Any objection? Thank you, everybody, very much. We are adjourned.